podcast, it is likely either late winter or spring, and you are probably thinking of taking the MCAT either in anticipation of a summer 2014 medical school application, or you are planning ahead to apply in summer 2015. Some of you may even be in the midst of an MCAT course. In any case, you're in luck. A critical element of your application is the MCAT test, and during today's show, you and I are going to hear from an MCAT expert. Hello, I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. Welcome to Admission Straight Talk. Before I introduce our special guest, I would like to acquaint you with a free downloadable resource at Accepted to help applicants starting down the medical school application path. Navigating the med school maze has expert admissions tips for medical school applicants. It can help you submit a thoughtful and persuasive medical school application. And it's a free download. You know, it doesn't even cost you any money. You can find links in the show notes to Navigating the Med School Maze, as well as to other resources for medical school applicants. And you can find the show notes at info.accepted.com/47. I invite you to take advantage of these free resources to aid you as you apply, but to do so after we talk to our special guest. Back to the MCAT. It isn't free, unlike Navigating the Med School Maze. It isn't free, usually, and it is never easy. Today, I have asked Megan Galvin to join me and educate us about the MCAT, specifically how to prepare for the MCAT and ace it on test day. In addition to educating us about Exam Crackers, the company she has worked for since 2007. Today, Megan is the National Program Director for Exam Crackers. She's an expert at making the most of your study time via effective, solid MCAT preparation. She's also hard at work on MCAT programs for post-bac students and non-traditional med school applicants. We'll ask her more about that in a few minutes. But now, I would like to welcome Megan Galvin to Admission Straight Talk. Thanks for joining me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Linda. I've been looking forward to the call, and certainly I hope this broadcast will help many students who are starting their path or their journey into a future in medicine. So, yes, let's get started.
Okay, great. How does an applicant know how much time he or she should budget for the MCAT? I'm guessing it varies from individual to individual, but how does an applicant assess it?
Excellent question, and one that definitely I talk with students about on a daily basis. And I do believe overall it is an individual choice, but more or less as a rule of thumb, what I like to suggest to students is, first and foremost, really understand the timeline themselves. Just about every student that I talk with that's embarking on an MCAT preparation typically has some form or some list, so to say, of med schools that are going to be their hopefuls. So what I typically like to do is make sure, you know, well, that's actually a second part, but what I typically like to do is, first and foremost, discover and make sure that we're very solid with our understanding and have completed all of those first year, more or less, undergrad science courses, strong understanding, feeling really good, feeling comfortable. If there is any reason that potentially one of those classes or one of those courses needs a retake, I typically do recommend that to students before they embark on any kind of preparation. Throughout the MCAT preparation in and of itself and kind of coming into it with the assumption that I am mastering or I have mastered my sciences, our program at Exam Crackers actually is more or less a 9-week preparation course, which we can talk more about. 9 weeks of classroom preparation, meeting twice a week, roughly about 64 hours of preparation, combined with many, many different forms of practice questions and simulated AAMC practice exams. What I like to see students do in that time frame then, so I had mentioned 9 weeks, I like students to really give themselves 9 or 10 weeks and then sit for an official MCAT. So if they complete our course or complete something like, say, a self-study or a home study, I like to see them then taking an official MCAT, usually within, you know, as I said, 1, 2, possibly 3 weeks of that completion date. And the reason for that is, statistically, we've done a lot of research, and, you know, we found out that students have the ability to really retain the information. They've recently just prepared, so to say, with the information that's fresh in their mind. But what you'll also see throughout the process is not only reviewing content information and really practicing up some of those practice passages and AAMC practice exams, is then the student's going to be at their highest momentum, you know, more or less their highest peak that they're going to be. When they tend to give themselves some downtime, you know, let's say they finish my course, let's say it's the end of April, and they say, you know what, Meg, I'm not going to take my exam until August. I typically will step in if I have the opportunity to say to the student, why? What are you waiting for? Why the procrastination? Well, you know, I want to, you know, I saved all my practice exams. I didn't take them. I'm going to take them all now. Or, you know, I want to get through this or I want to get through that. Typically what I hear that student saying in my mind is they're setting themselves up for failure. Okay, right then and there, they're enabling or asking me to enable them to more or less, you know, put off the necessary evil. And I'm not really sure why that's a good idea. And one of the unique things about Exam Crackers, which I'm sure we'll have a chance to chat about, is we focus on that with the students. We talk about something during Zen Week that really deals with the students in taking the exam in a timely fashion.
What is Zen Week?
Zen Week really deals with more or less the mental aspect and the mental and the physical aspect of the exam. But more or less, we know you're intellectually prepared for the exam. You've been through the undergrad sciences. You've been through the 9 weeks of in-class preparation. But what some students tend to do, if they give themselves a gap or, you know, a time frame before they sit for the official MCAT, is they take matters into their own hands and freak out. Okay, the anxiety level gets to them, and suddenly they become mad Googlers. Okay, in the middle of the night, they're looking up one more time, what more do I need to know about projectile motion? Okay, and they're going crazy, finding anything and everything they possibly can, because that confidence level starts to dip. And it's a natural occurrence, in my opinion, for you to start to stress out. What if? We all play the what if game in different circumstances in our life, but I typically see it with students in this exam, or you know, preparing for this exam. So Zen Week deals with no cramming, no last minute, you know, I'm going to suddenly master the verbal method in 3 days or something like that. It's not possible, okay? Mm-hmm. That's what that 9 weeks was designed for. There's nothing you can potentially achieve in a 3, 4, or 5 day, whatever it may be, 2 week time span that's going to make a difference on your MCAT. The MCAT is designed for students to be able to retain, recall, and more or less execute everything that they've actually learned throughout the review process in a calmer fashion on official MCAT day. And that's when students typically allow that anxiety to really kind of take over. Some students are known to, you know, go out and maybe start a, you know, crash diet or start a crazy exercise regimen because, you know, suddenly it's going to bring some more balance or maybe some, you know, meditation or relieving type things into their minds. What I recommend to my students is go out and see a good movie. Go out for a nice long walk. Go out and think about anything other than MCAT, okay? Yeah. You deserve it. Reward yourself with that prior to sitting for your official MCAT exam, okay? There's no reason to potentially go back in, and I think students sell themselves short. And at the end of the day, you know, I can talk for many hours about MCAT, but at the end of the day, I think this test has a very high level of confidence attached right to it. And I think it's usually within the student and the one that looks at it as a challenge, how I'm going to overcome it, how I recognize what my weak areas are, embracing them, confronting them, learning how to work through it. A ton of practice, whether it be in passages, whether it be in, you know, sample AAMC practice exams. That truly is what a student's going to need to incorporate into their preparation in order to see the improvement or even the high scores that certainly should be their goals.
Great. Thank you so much. Now, Exam Crackers offers traditional in-class courses, audio courses, and self-prep test prep books, and it has been growing like crazy since its founding in 1997. What is distinctive about Exam Crackers' approach to MCAT test prep?
Okay, a couple of things, and also another great question. Love this one. I think overall, this really kind of fits with three different components, one being the classroom format. And, you know, there's even an extension of that that you potentially can see if you're doing a self-study. But our classroom content really focuses, if you're doing a live class with us, it's typically a four-hour session twice a week.
Wow.
So what will actually happen in that four-hour session, students will listen to the instructor give a 50-minute summary of that chapter, definitely hitting the high notes, focusing on those high-yield topics, putting their own spin, more or less, on the material to the students on how they're going to be tested on that content information and how they'll most likely see that on their official MCAT. The 50-minute lecture is timed on purpose. We do that. We've designed it that way because we know a typical person generally has a 45-minute attention span. So in other words, you're not going to hear somebody drone on for 4 hours endlessly about this, that, and the other thing. You'll become exhausted. As I said, you'll lose your attention span, and most likely you'll miss something very important. The chances are you'll probably see it on your official MCAT. So you'll have a 50-minute lecture. Then immediately following that, students will work on a 30-minute in-class exam that really focuses, again, on that chapter's material, okay, and how to answer questions applying, you know, the science that is in that chapter to the way the MCAT actually tests for it. And that's a really important line that I just said there. How do I apply what I have mastered to the way the MCAT is testing it? Okay. Then immediately, it's very, if you think and just kind of think about that for a second, I think it speaks volumes. Then immediately following that, we do an in-class exam. And basically, we're going to pinpoint that correct answer. We need to know with accuracy and confidence why the correct answer is correct. But what's a little bit different about us is that we focus more on those incorrect answer choices then. How do I know I can eliminate answer choices A, C, and D? Why? Mm-hmm. And this is when we typically engage the students into the conversation. We want them to interact with the instructor. I need each student to understand what their mistake is, because chances are they're going to see that, whether it's worded that way or just slightly differently on their official MCAT, they need to know, again, as I said, with accuracy and confidence, how and why they should be eliminating those answers. Then we'll take a break. Second part of class, we'll come back and do a 50-minute lecture on the other chapter. Again, we'll work on a 30-minute in-class exam, and then, of course, we'll have that review. So we really pinpoint, or we emphasize testing, because as I mentioned earlier, the more you expose yourself to practice passages, the likelihood or the probability is much higher for you seeing an improvement in your score. You have got to practice. There's truth behind practice makes perfect. In our verbal section, I like to share with students, you know, the verbal method almost becomes an art form. The more you work on passages, the better you get at it, and you really kind of solidify that skill or that technique that you're going to need, you know, in answering questions and verbal reasoning. Now, the second thing that I think sets us apart from everyone else is our material. We recently, or this past August, just released our 8th edition of our MCAT manuals. We are getting phenomenal testimonials and feedback. We're very proud of that. What makes us a little bit different is we obviously edited, fine-tuned some of the stuff, corrected some typos, those kind of errors that were in there. But even more so, the graphics are astounding. I'm pretty much blown away when I look at them. Really 3D dimensional. It's almost as if a cell is popping out of the book. But most students, if they're like me, are visual learners. Those diagrams, those pictures, you know, the graphic that's actually in the book, very well, again, could be recollected on official MCAT day. Oh my gosh, I remember looking at the inside of that cell. I understand it, and I have a clear visual right now of what was in my textbook. Great. So again, something that sets us apart. Another thing, too, an interesting note that I want to point out, we're the only company that I'm aware of that actually addresses the errors that we have in our books. We have a section on our website that anyone can access that's called the errata section. We're not perfect. We know that. We try our best, obviously, doing editing and proofreading. Mistakes happen. They're in books everywhere. I challenge you to look at any book and tell me there's not an error in it. But we're okay with that, and we admit the mistakes, and certainly we address that. Anyone is free to look at it. If they do see an error in our book, most likely they're going to see that on the errata section where we have corrected it, and certainly pinpointed what the correct answer is, and so that way students, again, know for accuracy, okay, now I understand it. And the third thing I think that really sets us apart are the instructors that we actually have teaching the class. I get asked this question pretty much on a regular basis, who's going to be teaching me? I'd want to know, too. If I was investing my money and certainly my time in an MCAT prep class, I'd want to know who's on the other side of it. And I'd love to tell everyone that we get everyone that has, you know, a 40 on an MCAT. But sometimes that's not necessarily the best person teaching the class. Of course, I do look for, you know, our guidelines do ask us to look for the highest scores that we possibly can. But there's something also a little bit different that I look for as far as a personality. Do they have teaching experience? Do they understand why they scored so well on their own MCAT? What do they think the MCAT is testing? You know, there's quite a few things that go into our screening, and we are still a relatively small company. Myself and about five other people are responsible for selecting and recruiting our instructors, and I'm actually very proud to say that we do hand select them. You know, I go out, and in fact, I was doing it this morning. Pretty much every day of my life, I'm recruiting instructors, kind of picking and choosing who's the best one, sending them off to training, and which again is pretty aggressive and certainly. I don't want to say grueling, but I think it's a pretty intense process for the instructor, too. Once they've hit all the marks, you know, certainly satisfied with where they want to be, they then get in front of the classroom. One of the great things, too, is that we're looking at instructors that have recently, as I said, been through the experience, taken an MCAT themselves. They understand what it's like to sit in that seat. You know, not too long ago, they went through the same feeling or the same experience. So they're really able to deliver exactly what we're looking for in the classroom. And everything we do is kind of self-created from within the instructor. So in other words, I'm not handing them scripts, which I think is also another very genuine and very real approach. You're not going to see anyone kind of giving canned copy of, you know, don't deviate from the script. This is what I want you teaching. So I think true personalities really kind of show through. And I know that the students definitely really appreciate that, you know, as far as who it is that's actually teaching their class. And it even goes a step beyond, too. Not only are they reviewing the information for MCAT, they're also providing a lot of very valuable firsthand knowledge on, you know, application, admissions process, that kind of thing, of what worked for them. And I think the students definitely need to hear that, you know, and I think it's a trusted source for them.
Great, great. Do if the teachers are in a class, I mean, classes tend to have characters. And it's sure. Always surprised me with my children when they were in school that the classes that they were in each had a distinctive character. Now, are the teachers given permission or encouraged even to adjust their teaching style and maybe even the content a little bit, depending upon the character of the class they're teaching?
Yep, another great point as well. And you know, I fortunately have seen it pretty much all across the country. My primary focus is here in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic regions, although I have and do work with students all across the country, and that does come into play all the time. And, you know, certainly I ask them to, you know, adjust themselves to what's going on with the class, making sure they read body language, making sure that they are connecting with the students. We also have a process in place, what we call the student evaluations, and throughout the nine-week course, students are evaluating their instructors roughly five times. They scale them between numerically 1 and 10, 10 being the best. But then the student also leaves comments, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly of what they like about the class, maybe what they don't like about the class. And we certainly address them. We do share them anonymously with the instructors and, you know, talk with them and basically say, you know, there's a couple of things that we need to do to deliver a better presentation in class, or this is what the students are saying about you. So it is not falling on deaf ears, I guess. We're definitely monitoring kind of what's going on, and myself and my team of coordinators are definitely, you know, very much in tune with what needs to get done, and that happens roughly every about 10 days or so we're doing evaluations. So we try and say that we're staying on top of it. The rare instance or the unfortunate instance where maybe it's not a good fit in class, you know, we'll continue to do whatever we can. But, you know, when necessary or if necessary, you know, from time to time we have to replace instructors. And, you know, if they're not connecting, it's not serving anyone, the purpose of why we're all together. So, sure. You know, we're very quick, you know, to come up with a resolution on that as well.
Sure. Now, when do you recommend self-study, a full-blown class, or your audio program? Assuming for the moment that the student is in a city where they have access to your full-blown class.
I think that's also a great question. When I have a student that will call me a student prospect, you know, I always, you know, oh, Meg, I wanted to enroll in your class at XYZ University. I just had a couple of logistic questions. Okay, great. We go through them. But when I have one that's really probing, and I can tell usually just within about a minute or two of talking with them, what I usually say is, let's back up here. Tell me a little bit about yourself. Well, it's been, you know, 4 years since I graduated from college. I'm what you consider right now non-traditional. Oh, okay, great. What do you have going on? So I want to start to hear and determine what would be best suited for that student. If they say, you know, I'm working full-time, I'm trying to prepare for my MCAT, I did my undergrad 4 years ago, I was pre-med, I dropped out, ended up, you know, graduating whatever, with history major, whatever it may be, I'm listening for certain things. I'm hearing, you know, when was the last time you took the science courses. If they haven't had science courses in 4 years, and then when they did, we may even be going back another 3 years to when they were, you know, a freshman. Right. So we're looking at somebody that potentially is 7 years removed from any kind of formalized science classes. That person, I'm not very quick to hurry up and get into my class. I tell them straight up, very much point blank, you need to get your hands back into textbooks and get familiar again with the content. If not, enroll in some kind of post-bac program or something along those lines that's going to help familiarize you again and expose you to the sciences, because you're just too far removed. So I think that's an important element for everyone to really, really understand. I have seen people be extremely successful with a self-study. However, I think it takes a special person. I think they need to be very real and true to themselves. And if they're disciplined, very structured, are able to incorporate the audio osmosis, which is our audio component of this, if they're able to incorporate that, stay regimented with the amount of reading that they're going to have to do. Remember, they don't have a classroom to show up with, so nobody necessarily is holding them accountable for that, or there's no bank account that's necessarily hurting because they're throwing money out the window. So that's, you know, definitely something that needs to be decided. And then the other element, I need to make sure that this person is able to really be a self-learner or a self-studier. There's others that need to be in a class. They need to hear chit-chat. They want to be exposed to the questions that are asked in class because maybe that's something they would have never dreamed of asking. But they're the kind of student that's definitely going to benefit from more or less that organized, you know, classroom. And I would say overall, the classroom or live course is very successful. I'd say probably between 80 and 90% of our students. But if you're really at that upper echelon and you're really looking to maybe just get one or two more points on your MCAT, that person, I would say, you know, I would question, you know, where are your doubts? Where isn't your confidence? And maybe that's a person that would be better suited for potentially some private tutoring. In those tutoring sessions, I would probably really stress the fact that, you know, let's say they're really shaky maybe on some physics or some concepts or content information in physics. I would really have that person practicing those practice passages alone or privately, one-on-one with a tutor, so they truly understand, you know, what exactly their problem is, diagnosing it or self-assessing it with me ahead of time, and then setting up that kind of thing. But self-study, as I said, does and can be extremely successful. You know, again, the only other thing I don't want to say weary of, or something that I throw caution to, is make sure that you're not turning a 9 or 10 week program into something that spans over 18 to 24 weeks, because there's no end in sight. Mm-hmm. And again, you start to play with the enabling, okay, well, I'm buying myself some time, you know, I'm coming up with excuses, it's okay. You know, it's really not okay. I don't know why we want to delay the process of getting into med school. It's only going to be that much more difficult with your competition. Again, I'm sure we'll talk about the 2015 changes.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot at stake. And, you know,
Especially this year, my goodness. You really can't afford to delay this year. We'll get there. I'm going to definitely ask about it. But
yeah, I know. I'm sure you will. But, you know, my feeling is the longer you wait, the less attainable it's going to be. You know, and your heart or something is standing in the way. You know, something is that diversion there, and unless you're willing to really investigate what it is that's holding you back, you know, maybe this really is not your chosen, you know, future or path to go. And you that's why I say you have to be real with yourself, you know, and ask yourself the important questions, you know, of what, why you're doing this, what you want to achieve, but then also, what's bringing you to Exam Crackers, or why do you want to be in an organized course? Tell me what you know about us. Tell me what you think you're going to achieve in class. Now, another thing I just want to maybe stress, if I can, during this phone call, our live classes are review classes. Students are not coming to us to learn concepts. That's on them.
Mm-hmm.
And as I stated, we basically have the assumption that you have mastered your sciences. You're coming into our class to revisit, bring things, like I mentioned, from the back burner up to the forefront, hear it again. Oh, that's right. Okay, those are the only three things I need to know about equilibrium. All right, got it. And this is how I'm going to be asked on it. That's the kind of student that's going to excel and do very, very well with our program.
Okay, great. Now, you also mentioned, and I hadn't asked about this earlier, but you appear to have also more customized individual programs or tutors if students are interested. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go on to a different topic, and that is your program for post-bac students or non-traditional students. How are those programs different than your programs for traditional medical school applicants? And if somebody is a post-bac or non-traditional applicant, where can they learn about your programs for non-traditional applicants?
Okay. Well, most of my post-bac programs that I, so to say, have running right now are doing so in conjunction with post-bac programs at any given university.
I see.
So I will probably, you know, and they are scattered throughout the U.S., and I don't think it's maybe appropriate for me to discuss them here.
Okay. But that's probably why I didn't find them on your website either.
Yeah, right. But what I think, you know, if someone is involved or considering potentially enrolling or getting themselves into a post-bac program, is asking that as far as prior to them enrolling and getting accepted. You know, what do you offer as far as MCAT preparations? Do you have anything standardized? Do you have anything set up? Is that, you know, something that's on me? Is that something that you organize? Because my understanding is a good portion of post-bac and even some of the undergrad campuses, I'm not going to get into that too much, but they do have some kind of formalized, maybe MCAT course that they're offering, whether it's a professor that's teaching it, something along those lines, and again, I'm not going to get into that during this call, but mm-hmm. that's typically how they could find out about it, and they're popping up pretty much all over, mm-hmm. so even if someone's not using, so to say, Exam Crackers as their provider, you know, for the MCAT preparation, they could or they may have something already in place, so as a post-bac, I would ask that. Now, I kind of stumbled into post-bac because I'm obviously a little bit older, and I seem to really connect with an older student. I understand what it's like to be out in the real world. I have a family, you know, and I understand all the reality and certainly life experiences that come out under, you know, or come into play. So for some, whatever reason, I'm attracted to that type of student. I tend to get along with them very well. Now, what I see is with these career changers or sometimes non-traditional students is they're coming from a background that's not very heavy in the science, and I find it, you know, very interesting and certainly admirable that they're ready to embark on something that maybe wasn't their chosen, you know, path, so to say, 10 years ago or whatever it may be. So, you know, maybe that's one thing. Mm-hmm. Now, what I do with our post-bac program is I really talk with, you know, the director, whoever it is at that university, to find out, the identity, and I do a lot of profiling on the student. I mean, a tremendous amount of research on my end, asking a lot of questions, just so I can really understand who this typical student is. And then, again, with talking with the director of whoever's organizing the post-bac, you know, we'll find out some kind of very important things. You know, for example, let's say their first year of the post-bac program, all they're doing is the biological sciences and maybe some lab. Okay, so I'm not going to necessarily jump them right into a full-blown 9-week comprehensive course dealing with physics, chemistry, orgo, those kind of things, if they haven't even gotten there yet. They're still reviewing bio and they're working on the lab component. So what I typically do is a soft approach. I'll start out and really introduce MCAT, get students thinking MCAT, get them used to some terminology, used to some organization, but we'll always start things out at usually with a little bit longer of a verbal course, meaning something along the lines of a verbal intensive course where we really get into it, start to understand it, get students comfortable with the method and technique, because a lot of what they learn with using our verbal method can be incorporated into the science component of the MCAT, not necessarily or obviously for the science content information, but for that skill or that technique that they've exposed themselves to and in some cases mastered. And then we'll start up with the sciences. And I work very closely then with whatever their curriculum or syllabus is, more or less, with the academic calendar at that said university. So I'll stack it. So, you know, let's say that first semester, like I said, they're doing bio. What I'll probably do after the verbal intensive is over is I'll start up with my biological component section of the course. Okay, and we'll start to work on that. Then let's say spring semester, they're going to be doing chemistry and physics. Alongside that, maybe once a week, and I'll break it down into even shorter sessions instead of a four-hour session, I might meet once a week and maybe start to do chemistry. Then I'll flip over to the physics. So what I mean by that is I think it's very structured and tailored to exactly what the goals and certainly mission is of that said post-bac program. So I think that's a great thing. Now, if you're a post-bac and, let's say, just floating around out there at any university, USA, which is fine. I know there's thousands of you out there. Typically, you know, what I saw prior to doing what I started probably within the last 2 years is I've had post-bac students my entire time with exam preppers. They tend to do extraordinarily well also in our classes. Why? I don't know. My assumption is, again, they have a little bit more at stake. They're a little bit older, they're a little bit wiser, they have some life experience under their belt, so they very much take advantage of the structure of the 9-week, you know, typical comprehensive course that we're doing. They don't make up excuses as to why they're not there. They are, and they do attend class. They do take their exams when I tell them.
I think they're a little more motivated.
I think that's
as
it.
A group,
I mean,
as a group, not talking individuals, but as a group.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there
and
are
I
still...
Don't meet,
still
yeah, and I don't mean to discriminate. Yeah.
Doing it out of family pressure or whatever, they may not be as committed.
Well, the cards are different. I mean, I think, you know, and I think I see that with a lot of students, but, you know, if I had to generalize, I would say that a post-bac student tends to be more serious.
Yeah.
And they tend to be a lot more accountable because they've seen the other side. They've had a glimpse. They've lived it. You know, something that maybe a typical undergrad may just not have experienced yet. They're just not there. They're not out in the real world. They haven't had to pay their own bills. They haven't had to deal with some of life's challenges yet. They haven't had to work at a job 9 to 5 and realize, this really stinks.
Sounds
I want
good.
A better life for myself, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Agreed.
So.
All right. Let's move on. It was very interesting hearing about the post-bac and the non-traditional students, but let's move on because the MCAT is about to change in a big, big way. big way. The last administration of the current exam will be in January 2015. And then come spring, it's a whole new, bigger, grander, more time-consuming test. Can you outline what's coming down the pike in spring 2015?
Well, I think everyone needs to, first and foremost, visit the AAMC.org. I realize that their preview manual tends to be extremely lengthy and probably quite confusing, and you know, just another document to read that, you know, ultimately you're going to get lost in. But what I can share and you know, kind of the shorter version of all of this, it's going to be a much longer exam. Okay. It's not going to be half a day. In fact, students need to understand it's going to be a full day. So stamina absolutely.
It's 6 hours, isn't it?
What's that?
It's supposed to be 6 hours, the new exam, right?
Yes. Yep. Six hours. So stamina is definitely going to end, and that's a difficult test for anyone to sit through. 6 hours is an incredibly long time, a grueling time, and an incredibly stressful time. So that first and foremost. But, you know, for the most part, what I'd like to share is, obviously, there's not going to be any kind of writing section on there. In fact, that's been out this entire year. Or since 2013, they've dropped the writing section. Now, one of the things they're going to be adding in is that a new section really covering the psychology and more or less the sociology section, which will really show med students or med school that students are balanced, okay, not only with the science but within the understanding of the health science and how they're connected to psychology. You know, it's more or less labeled on the AAMC as far as the guidelines as they're testing the new core competencies that the AAMC has for getting into med school. So I guess the connection that they're trying to make is that the health in and of itself is really connected to psychology and sociology. Another idea on all of this is that they're going to put a greater emphasis on the molecular biology and a little less on the orgo or organic chemistry. And the biological and physical sciences are going to be much more integrated, meaning that the passages will be integrated into one another. It's going to be much less straight physics is actually going to be tested. And as I said, they're going to be kind of intertwining things and intertwining them really based on research skills. In fact, 50% of the questions are going to be tested on research skills. And I think, again, what they're ultimately trying to find out is, you know, do students have the skills that relate to research on how to prepare students more or less on that evidence-based, you know, really testing their critical thinking skills. So from my understanding is that they're going to be given, you know, more or less a research study, so to say, to be reading through rather than a straight passage or in a passage format, and being really to understand how to use, you know, the language of science, but also those critical thinking skills in answering those type of questions.
Now, when you say that it's going to be more research-based, do you mean that they're testing whether students are able to read and interpret research, or that it's going to be more important that students actually do research before they apply?
No.
Right.
Read and interpret. The first one was correct, accurate. So, and then the verbal section is pretty much going to stay the same for all intents and purposes. However, they're changing the name of it to CARS, which is that critical analysis and reasoning skills. Okay, so if you look at that again, those you know, analytical, critical thinking, those kind of skills, I think, are definitely going to come into play. And I think we can reserve for another call, hopefully someday, or if students wish to talk with me. One of the biggest, I think, fears about verbal reasoning in and of itself is the fact that it's not that tangible subject book, you know, that we all kind of have under our belt. I mean, no one's walking around with a verbal reasoning book, okay? You are walking around with a bio textbook, that's for sure. So I think, you know, something, or a little personal story that I'll actually share with you that I use with a lot of my students is, you know, typically that first night or that first encounter that I have with students, I say, what do you think the MCAT's testing?
Yeah. What do they
Why?
Say?
Yeah. Well, and I like them to keep that, you know, oh, they're testing to see how well you know the science. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's hands down. We know that. But I think if you take it one step further and kind of maybe even write it on a sticky note and stick it on your mirror, think about 10, 15 years or however long it takes for you to get through the entire process of med school and residency and all that other great stuff. Who do they want in the emergency room or in that operating room? Do they want someone that's reading from a textbook? Or do they want someone that can think through a very difficult, stressful situation where potentially your patient's going to die. Okay, so time is of the essence. So are they wanting you to just, you know, regurgitate what you learned in page 500 of your anatomy book? Or they want the kind of person that can draw conclusions, work quickly with a team, assess the situation, and act on it. Okay, that's who they really want. So when you start to accept that and really think, what is the MCAT testing? Who do they want in med school? Who do they want later on as a physician? That's going to really help you maybe understand what this test is all about. Okay, and I think it paints a very clear picture. Because if you have somebody that's being robotic and reading, you know, or praying that what they memorized years ago is going to come to play, that's not going to cut it. In an emergency room situation, things are confusing, it's chaotic, it's scary. And as I said, time is of the essence. You don't have that time, but you have to be able to communicate with your team and assess what's happening so you can fix your patient, you know, and get them out of the woods, so to say. So that theme, in my opinion, is one that's very, very important. And when you can see through literally the smoky mirrors and understand that, you need to use that as your guide, okay? And that's some of those critical thinking and logical skills that I think they're going to be changing, or it appears as though they're actually changing for now in the MCAT, that I think is going to serve as a crucial, you know, element that, that students need to really wrap their brains around, literally. To try and understand it.
Right.
And as I said, the test is going to be longer. We did talk about that. In fact, 50% longer, so to say. I know they made the changes back in, well, they started in 2007 when they moved to the CBT exam, which didn't really come into play completely until 2008, where they pulled back, you know, and obviously made the test much shorter. So now we're reverting back and adding in these additional sections. So I think that, you know, as I said, overall, in a nutshell, that's more or less. But to be honest with you, you know, I don't want to say we're all still finding out. I think the best source, well, you know, and I honestly, it'll be interesting to see how things kind of transpire, especially for that first exam in February. I'm sure everyone's going to be very anxious and awaiting results and whatever. But hopefully everyone is aware that there is a test sample or a testing section that's going on right now that students can opt in or out of. And basically that's exposing them, you know, kind of trial and error as to how are students scoring, how are they receiving these type of questions, what kind of feedback. So they get into, like I said, more or less some kind of test study program and are awarded a gift card or something along the lines like that to stay involved in the study on that.
Will the score still be on a 45 scale?
From what I'm told, yes. I've actually heard two conflicting reports, and I don't believe, I know I checked prior to us getting onto this call. Mm-hmm. From what I understand, that still is going to be the scoring. I know at one time I thought it was going to change completely, and that was actually, I believe last year I was under that impression, but from what I'm told now, we're staying at that 45. Have you heard differently?
No, I haven't at all.
Yeah.
I was also in preparing for the call. I was looking for information on that and couldn't find it. Now, let's say you're an applicant, okay? You're obviously, if you're applying this summer, you have to take the current exam. But if you're planning to apply next summer, you're planning to apply in summer of 2015 to matriculate in 2016, and you have taken the basic sciences, and AMC is opening up, I think, additional test dates in the fall. It sounds to me like a no-brainer that you should try and get yourself to take the MCAT. It'll be a shorter exam. And how long will it be good for going forward?
That's a good question. You know, I thought of, I figured this is where you were going with that question, and certainly one that I want to find out the answer to. I think now your MCAT scores are good for, I believe, 2 or 3 years, and then they become invalid. But definitely one, I'm sorry, If I could scramble real quickly here and look and try and Google, I would. I'll be sure to follow up with you in an email.
Maybe if you follow up in the email, I'll include it in the show notes.
Okay.
Okay.
But I agree, and I anticipate that there's going to be a tremendous influx of students coming in to the summer, and then certainly they've added additional dates in September, and as you said, I believe in January they can still take the old exam. Love that. I think that's wonderful. I tend to believe if I were in this situation, I would probably hurry up as well to take the 2014 MCAT version. I just fear and hope that students are doing, and it's a little late now, but, you know, for the spring semester, that they really have beefed up, more or less, those prereq sciences that they needed to have under their belt to adequately prepare them to maintain themselves, you know, in whatever review course they're in or self-study that they're deciding to do. Don't lose sight of that, okay? And let's make sure, you know, certainly that, you know, you are adequately prepared to be sitting in a class. Otherwise, you're just going to be spinning wheels. Right. And that's another thing. I just want to talk real quickly about that. Sometimes students may say to me, you know, why isn't this working for me, or what's going on, or I took XYZ course, that didn't work for me, nothing's working, so on and so forth. So a lot of, again, assessment needs to really be addressed and talked about, and you know, no holds barred. I mean, let's be honest with one another so I can truly help you. But what I typically see is that if a student is kidding themselves and thinking, you know, I got to be in physics, you know, it's all good, you know, and I'll probably be able to remember it. If that's not really necessarily the case and you really cannot recall the physics or whatever that you had taken, it's not going to magically drop on your lap by being in a review course. Again, it's going to require a lot of attention on your part and for you to embrace, as I mentioned earlier, the fact that that's one of your weaknesses. In fact, that's something that I would hone in on and, you know, do my best to get my hands on, you know, a physics textbook, you know, undergrad textbook, to make sure that I did the work outside of class to really make sure I was feeling strong, you know, sound and solid in that subject matter. Otherwise, while you're sitting in class, you're going to be freaking out. And guess what's going to happen? That wall is going to start to go up around yourself, and then nothing's going to get in. It's just going to be like sitting there and reflecting all the information. It's not even going to get in because you're going to be like, I can't believe I don't know this. This isn't working for me. I have no idea what he's talking about. I don't know what to do. And you're not even going to know what is going in class, let alone having the skills or the tools in the toolbox, more or less, to utilize what's happening in class. Right. So I guess I'm sharing this with you because I'm a little concerned of, you know, maybe who is thinking, you know, that they can hurry up this summer and do it.
Right. So basically, they have to have the science prereqs.
Absolutely. You know,
if they don't have it, they're wasting their time and money.
Definitely. You know, and it's going to become the Achilles heel, and it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. It snowballs. You know, so, you know, and a lot of times students might take, let's say maybe their Orgo 2 or something like that in conjunction or while they're taking our class. Mm-hmm. That's okay. In some cases, again, it does vary individually. I'm okay with that. But they have to have had a really strong base to come off of. Mm-hmm. So if you clearly understood Orgo 1 and felt really great with it and had a high score or an overall good GPA in that or whatever, great, you know. But if you didn't, and, you know, as I said, it's not a magical fix. There's not going to be a Band-Aid that you can put on this. And I would never advise a student to play, you know, more or less roulette and hope to God that they get a version of the MCAT that's not heavily, you know, whatever. Physics-based or something like that, which is ridiculous if you think that's going to happen. Yeah.
Right, right. And I assume you're preparing materials for MCAT 2015, right?
Absolutely we are. I mean, we're keeping
You'll be ready for
quiet,
the spring. You'll be ready for the spring exam.
We definitely will be. We've been working for quite some time, you know, on redesigning the books, you know, adding in certainly the new material that we're told is actually going to be on there. We're not changing all that much, though, as far as what everyone loves and certainly trusts and respects about exam crackers. It's still going to be delivered in the same format. It's going to be very robust. It's not going to be watered down, and I think that's, you know, really an important thing. Exam crackers is going to stay the same, you know, as far as our style and the way we teach. The only difference is going to be really our books and, you know, how we actually cover the new content, you know, that we're being told is going to be on the new exams. So I think that, you know, with all of that being said, and we'll be making some announcements, hopefully, in some of the summer, and then obviously the fall, we usually crank, well, probably not so much the summer, but more so in the fall, we'll really be focusing and announcing kind of what's to come when we start doing some of the fall conventions, seminars, those kind of things we typically participate in, you know, whether they're pre-med or usually the pre-med events are the ones that we're at, whether it's an exhibit or whatever. And then I believe this summer, I'm sure I'll be attending and certainly talking with the advisors when we do the National Advisor Convention, which I believe is in June this year. So I'm looking forward to that and certainly swapping some information with some old friends and familiar faces in the advisor world. So
great. Great. Megan, this has been highly informative. You've been very generous with your time and your information. Thank you so much. Where can a listener learn more about your work at Exam Crackers or how you said that you respond to emails? How could they contact you?
Sure, that would be great. I mean, they can always go to our website, which is www.examcrackers.com, or they can call our 800 number, which is 888-572-2536. If they ask for me, the office will certainly give them my phone number and direct them to me, and I love chatting with students. In fact, I talk with students pretty much 90% of my day.
Wow.
And if you're inclined to send an email, it's very simple, megan@examcrackers.com as well. And, you know, I welcome all the inquiries, and I certainly wish everyone all the best. And, you know, if you believe in yourself and, you know, get your confidence level up, I certainly believe this is an exam that you can master. And as I said, reach for the stars as far as becoming one of our future doctors.
Sounds great. We'll include a link in the show notes at info.exepa.com/47 to Exam Crackers for sure. We'll also include a link. You'd mentioned, you know, AAMC information about MCAT 2015, and I actually, when I was preparing, I said we got to include this, so we're going to include that too. And as well as the resources,
the huge document.
Yeah, well, even the summary that I read, I did not read the huge document, was helpful and informative. So check them all out at the show notes, and again, the links will be at info.exepa.com/47. Megan, thanks once more. Listener, thank you too for tuning in to this, our 47th episode. As always, please share your feedback. You can leave any kind of feedback on iTunes, the blog, or by emailing linda@exepa.com. And if you're not yet a subscriber, you can subscribe either through iTunes, Stitcher, or Zoom. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.